Hello everyone, welcome to the show, and today's guest is Garnet Schuhhauser. Is that how I pronounce your last name?
Yes.
I've got it right. I was a little bit sort of iffy on the pronunciation. Garnet, thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you for inviting me, Peter.
No worries. Now, I've seen a little bit of your story. Of course, in the description part of this video where people are downloading the audio version, there is a link directly to your website and to the books that you've done and other interviews. Would you mind giving the viewers and listeners just a little bit of an overview on who you are?
Okay, well, I live in Canada near Victoria on the west coast of Canada right now. I was born and raised in the on the prairies in Canada. I was raised in a very religious Roman Catholic family. I served as an altar boy for many years and faithfully followed all the rules of the church. The driving force behind our religion was my mother, who is a feisty Irish lady who is determined to ensure that her husband and five kids all made it to heaven, even if she had to drag us kicking and screaming. And so that's my early background. I graduated from high school, went to university, graduated from law school. And then I went to Calgary, also in Canada, to practice corporate law, where I practiced for about 34 years. And then I retired in 2008. My early upbringing in terms of my religious beliefs sort of got lost on me somewhere along the line. And by the time I reached my 30s or 40s, I had rejected a lot of the beliefs I was taught as a kid by the church. And I was searching for a new paradigm to latch onto. And I constantly asked myself the eternal questions that everyone gets to at one point or another, like, who am I? Why am I here? What's my life's purpose? And what happens to me when I die? Those are questions everyone asks. And then so then one fateful day in 2007, my life was transformed and all those questions were answered. And here's how it happened. I was still practicing law, and I was walking down the street one sunny afternoon in May, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a homeless man jumps in front of me. And he looked very much like a typical homeless man. He had long, greasy hair and a scraggly beard, and he was wearing dirty, slept-in clothes. And my usual practice when I encountered these people was just to do a quick sidestep and go around. But there's something very different about this guy. He had these amazing, sparkling, dazzling blue eyes that shone like two little blue stars. And they were doing two things. First of all, they were penetrating deep within me. And I felt like he was looking down into the depths of my soul. And I sensed that he knew everything about me, everything I'd ever said or done, all my thoughts, my beliefs, my hopes and aspirations. Which is really quite amazing because we had never met before. I'd never encountered this guy before. And then, but I didn't feel violated because at the same time, he was sending me this wave of pure unconditional love that was infusing my whole body with an amazing sense of peace and security. And so I stood there like a deer caught in the headlights. I was basically transfixed, like a time warp. Don't know how long I was there until he finally broke the spell by saying to me, "Why are you here?" Then he quickly disappeared into a nearby store. Well, when I finally collected my wits, I went into the store to find him, but he was nowhere to be seen. I walked back out onto the street, walked up and down, but he had seemingly disappeared into thin air. So the very next day, I went back to the same street at the same time of day, and hoping to find this homeless man. I knew I had to find out who he was and why he had stopped me. So I walked up and down the street for 15 or 20 minutes, about to lose hope, when then I spotted him sitting on a bench by himself. So I walked over to him and I said, "Who are you and why did you stop me the other day?" And he said, "I'm a soul just like you. I'm here to answer your questions and help you on your journey." And then my skeptical lawyer brain kicked in and I said to him, "Well, why do you think you could help me when it appears you can't even help yourself? Because you've been sleeping on the street for weeks and you smell like a dead fish." Well, he just gave me a big smile and he said, "You know, looks can be deceiving because you look like you're a very successful lawyer with everything under control, but we both know that's just a facade." He said, "You can turn around, go back to your office and see if you can find all your answers in all those emails waiting for you on your computer, or you can sit down and have a chat with me." So luckily my intuition kicked in and I thought, okay, well, what do I have to lose? Half an hour of my time. I needed to find out more about this guy. So I sat down and we began a dialogue. That dialogue went off and on for several months after that. I found out his name was Albert, and he was really one of my spirit guides in disguise. And he told me that I was the only one who could see him as the homeless man. And I could actually see him and touch him. He felt very real to me. And he said if somebody else had been walking by the street that day, they would have seen me sitting all by myself on the bench. And so I asked him, well, why did you show up as the homeless man to me? Well, what was the reason for that? He said that had he started in sort of after my first three visits, he no longer appeared as a homeless man, and we communicated by telepathy. He was a voice in my head. And he told me that he showed up initially as the homeless man because had he started talking to me out of the blue as a voice in my head, I likely would have thought I was losing my mind. So this was his way of
Yeah.
easing me into the conversation. So it was a very clever way. And our dialogue went on for, as I say, off and on for several months. I asked him a lot of questions. He gave me very good answers that sort of rang true in my heart, that he basically made me feel comfortable with every answer he gave me, and I really felt that he was telling me the real truth, and I really, I it really resonated with me. I knew it was something that was really true, and that's the way it was. And then he told me partway through that he wasn't here just to answer my questions, but he wanted me to write a book about what he told me about his revelations, so that they would be available to everyone. And so this was a bit of a surprise to me. I'd never even dreamt of writing a book before this. So I struggled with it at first, tried to, dug my heels in a bit, tried to resist, but he was very gently persuasive, and eventually he won me over. And so, about a year after I met Albert, I retired from the law because it didn't seem to be very relevant to me anymore. And I knew that Albert had come there to send me off on a new path. And the new path was to become more spiritually enlightened and to write books, not just one, but several books about my dialogue and other adventures with Albert, and that was my new goal. And so I retired about a year later. I struggled a bit writing the first manuscript. When I had finished it, I was then struggling with the idea about whether I should have it published or not. I mean, one option was just to throw it in the drawer, never to be seen again. The other option was to get it published. And I was reluctant because I feared adverse reaction from family and friends and my former law colleagues and clients, because this was very different from from how they knew me. I was a very straight-laced, button-down corporate lawyer, never talked about religion or spirituality or anything like that. So this would have been sort of a shock to a lot of them. But after a while, I decided, as my friend Sherry Cortland put it, I had to come out of the spiritual closet. And so I did, and I got my book published. And that was my first book, Dancing on a Stamp.
What's some of the information in that book pertaining to your adventures, your experiences? What can you share with us with that book?
Well, the very first book was sort of giving me and everyone else sort of the big picture about how life on Earth works, the cycle of reincarnation, where we come from, where we're going, and how things and why we're here. I mean, he says basically we're all eternal souls that live forever, and we came from the spirit side, which is a wonderful place, very high vibrational place, where there's no negative emotions, just unconditional love. We don't need to eat or breathe or sleep, everything's just it's just a paradise, basically. It's like heaven, like some of the religions describe as heaven. I mean, that's basically what it is. Why do we come here? We come here by our own choice. And we choose to come to Earth to incarnate in a physical body so that we could experience things that we can't experience on the spirit side. And that adds to our knowledge and increases our wisdom and helps us evolve as souls. So that's why we come here. And before we come here, we each prepare a life plan. And that life plan sets out the major circumstances of our coming, upcoming new lives. Things like the place we're going to be born, the first language we learn, and the identity of our parents and siblings and friends and relatives and the other important people in our lives. And we map out some things that we want to encounter in order to help us on our path of evolution. But the thing is that once we're born, we don't remember that we have a life plan. And that's very deliberate. We don't remember that we had one. And because we have free will to act on Earth, Albert says we very often go off course. So our lives are not predetermined. We prepared a broad blueprint beforehand, but because we don't remember it, we often stray off course, sometimes way far off. But he said it's not a big deal because if you don't experience the things, everything you wanted to experience in this life, you can come back as many times as you like, but it's always your choice. And the thing that really flew in the face of what I was taught as a child is that he says that God, or he refers to God as the source, He says the source does not manipulate events in our lives or events on earth. So I was always taught that if you wanted something good to happen to you, you prayed to God, and if God felt that you deserved it, God could arrange things so that the good things would happen to you. Or if God felt that you were not deserving of good things, then he might visit bad things on you. So it was all sort of like God's up there sitting on a gold throne in the sky. We have to worship God and pray to God and ask for favors from God. Well, Albert says the source doesn't get involved in that. The source does not manipulate events, doesn't answer or respond to prayers, and the source doesn't make rules for us to follow, which is really quite a difference from what I was taught, which was that we have all these rules that came from God about how we act, how we should worship God. And if we breached any of these rules and didn't make amends, when we die, we could go to an awful place called hell. And so that was what I was raised with. Well, he says the source doesn't make rules. The source does not judge us or punish us after we die, no matter what we did. And so there's no hell, there's no Satan. Everyone who passes from this plane goes back to the spirit side, regardless of what you did. And that means, of course, that even the bad guys go back to heaven, which seems strange and unjust to some people, but that's just the way it is. And he said, they go back there because there's nowhere else to go. Like, we all go back to where we came from. So those are some of the things that really flew in the face of what the Catholic Church taught me. But they really made a lot of sense to me, and I really felt that, yes, okay, that's the answer. I mean, and I really had to write about his revelation so other people could read about what he told me and hopefully help some people. I know there's a lot of people out there who refer to themselves as recovering Catholics, and they're sort of raised in that way, and they think, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but they're trying to find something else to replace that set of beliefs. And hopefully what Albert has told me will help them replace that set of beliefs and help them move on, because they know that, okay, when I die, I'm going back to a beautiful place. No matter what I do, I don't have to worry about hell or punishment. And I'm here to learn and experience things. And if you can look at things in that light, then it just makes your journey on earth much more a happier journey, because you don't have sort of the worry about what happens at the very end. So that's, to me, it was very comforting, very inspiring, and I was happy to have the dialogue and to pass his message on to everyone else.
A lot of what you're saying is resonating, especially with your guide, or one of your guides, anyways. How my experiences started very similar, and it was a situation where some people wouldn't see her, some people would. And she's actually a light being in pure form, but she projected this image of a beautiful female lady with bigger eyes. She also referred to source as source, which is, there's just these commonalities, which is just funny in terms of. Also, the reincarnation, and we left source to go out and gain knowledge and have experience within itself. So it's consciousness interacting with itself, which is just one cell of a greater intelligence. So I'll show in other universes. So much of what you're explaining and how you're describing it is touching my heart, and it resonates a lot, and it does change your life. You can see how you were a 9-to-5 bloke working your butt off, and then this happens, and your whole direction shifts and changes, and it's about getting the information out, like we spoke about before the show. In saying that, has some of your experiences been you, whether it's physically or astrally, being taken to other realms, other places, and sort of reconnecting with other parts of yourself or beings that you know, or has there been any of that sort of stuff go on?
Yeah, after my first set of encounters with Albert, which were just a question and answer dialogue, Peter, he disappeared for a few months to let me write my manuscript, to sort of to let me get on with what he wanted me to do. And then so one night, I woke up in my bedroom, and I could see this ghost-like ethereal figure standing in the doorway of my bedroom. And when it moved closer, then I could recognize him. It was my old friend Albert, disguised in his homeless man disguise, but in astral form. And so I hadn't expect I've never seen him in this way before. I said, "Hi, Albert. What brings you here? What's happening?" And he said, "Well, I'm here to take you on a series of astral adventures to the spirit side, to other places in the universe, so that you can write about what you see in your next book." He said, because he believed that a picture was worth a thousand words. So rather than him describe what he wanted me to write about, he was going to show it to me. And so I said, "Well, I was surprised. I didn't know. I've never done this before." I said, Do I need to tell my wife where I'm going, Albert? Do I need a passport? And he just smiled and said, no, you're going to be back in your body before morning, and your wife won't even know you've ever been gone. So then he just literally, he reached out and pulled my astral body out of my physical body, which was still back and laying in bed, sound asleep. And he led me, took me by the hand. We rose up through the ceiling, up through the clouds, and we hovered at a high spot above our planet Earth. And he let me turn around and look at our planet. It was really an amazing scene. It was breathtaking from that viewpoint. It was like a jeweled pendant floating in the inky blackness of space. It was really beautiful. And if everybody on Earth could see Earth from that perspective, I think we would start to treat our planet with a lot more dignity and respect, and really stop our pollution. But anyway, that's another story. So very soon he then turned me around, and there was a shimmering doorway sort of floating in space. And it was all black behind it. There weren't any stars or anything, just total like black velvet behind it. And he said, this is the doorway to the spirit side. So he led me through it. And as soon as I stepped through the doorway, all of a sudden there I was standing in this beautiful meadow. It had lush green grass. It had tall, majestic trees, and all kinds of wildflowers resplendent in a like a thousand different colors. Colors we never see on Earth. That you can't even imagine, can't even describe the colors because they're so amazing. So it was a beautiful place. And Albert led me down a path, and we walked up a low hill. And at the top of the hill, I could see a group of souls waiting for me, or they seemed to be waiting for me at the bottom of the hill. So we walked down slowly towards them. And as I got closer, my heart skipped a beat because I recognized who they were. And they were my mother, my father, my brother, my grandparents, and various aunts and uncles who'd already passed away. And then running from behind the group, much to my delight, was my little dog, Oscar, a miniature schnauzer who had passed away about 10 years before. And he was running towards me with his little tail wagging his whole body. He was so happy to see me. So that was a great greeting. I had one misgiving about meeting this group, about meeting my mother in particular. Not that I didn't love her dearly, but that she had been very religious when she was living on Earth. Very religious Roman Catholic lady, and I was afraid that she wouldn't she'd be unhappy with me because I took a lot of shots about the Catholic Church in my first book, Dancing on a Stamp. So I wondered if she was angry with me, but she just wrapped her arms around me in a big hug and said, "Everything's okay." She said, "If I were still living on Earth, I would not be happy with what you wrote about the church in your book, but now I'm on the spirit side and I can see the whole picture." And I agree with everything that you said. So a relief. It's like, once everyone gets back to the spirit side, they do see the whole picture. No matter what they believed on Earth, they can now see that was off course or whatever, but now they can see the way it really is. And the way it really is as Albert described it to me. So then Albert led me away. He said that I can be reunited with my, family some other time. He had business for me to do. So then he led me towards this beautiful white city that was gleaming in the distance, a place he called Aglaia, one of the cities on the spirit side. So we walked towards it, went through the main entrance portal, and there we walked down the main boulevard. And it was really quite a colorful scene because they were just the streets were swarming with souls, people. They looked like humans, dressed in many different garments with many different colors from many different countries and eras on Earth. And it was like I was dropped into the middle of a costume ball. And so Albert explained that souls in the spirit side can choose to appear to others in whatever form they want to. And they will often choose to wear garments they enjoyed wearing from one of their previous lifetimes on Earth, hence the great variety from, all the different countries and different ages. And he said, but they can change their appearance whenever they want. And sometimes they'll just choose to appear as a globe of light. So it's really up to the soul. So anyway, he wanted to show me that this is how life on the spirit side works, and it was really quite amazing because they were all very happy, they were all very animated, they were just having a great time. It was like I felt like I'd like to join in with this group. Albert said, "No, it's not my time yet. So come with me." So he led me then to a big, tall, stately building with white pillars in the front that he called the Hall of Wisdom. And we went inside, entered a large circular chamber with a high dome ceiling. In the middle of the room was a horseshoe-shaped table with 11 souls seated behind it. And these 11 souls all had snow-white hair, smooth, unblemished skin, and they were wearing gold robes with white sashes. Albert explained that this was the Council of Wise Ones, and these were a group of very wise and advanced souls whose job it was to oversee all the incarnations on Earth. So then the chair of this council, her name was Sophia. She welcomed me and said, "Thank you for coming. We'd asked Albert to bring you here. We want to give you a message to take back to your fellow humans." And so her message was this. She said, "You know, your civilization is at a very advanced stage of development, but it's at a very crucial stage because you've developed amazing technology, but your emotional and spiritual intelligence has not kept up. And that means that too many negative emotions are running amok and controlling what goes on in your planet. That leads to strife and violence and killing and maiming and all the stuff you hear about in the news every day." And she said, "We really got to sort of get that under control. We have to learn to embrace love and compassion and discard our negative emotions so that we can raise our vibrations and increase our consciousness. And that's really what we have to do." And she said, "It's crucial now because we have weapons of mass destruction that can destroy all life on our planet if we're not careful. And we can end up crashing and burning like some of the other civilizations, earlier human civilizations on our planet. And we've heard of some of them like Lemuria and Atlantis, and there's been a few others that we haven't even discovered yet. And so they're very concerned that we don't end up in the same with the same fate as some of those other ones. And so they said, we really want you guys to focus, humans, to focus on addressing, controlling your negative emotions, stopping the violence, and trying to raise your vibrations. And ultimately, she said, if you raise your vibrations far enough, you can end up in Earth, in a higher dimension, which some people call the New Earth. So that's really the goal. She wanted me to take that message back to my humans, fellow humans, and I agreed to do so. And so then from there, Albert took me on our first astral trip outside of the spirit side. Do you want me to carry on with that, or do
Yeah,
you want to
please
ask a
do.
question?
Please do.
Okay. So he took me, we went out of the spirit side, back down to the dense plains of which Earth is a member. And he took me to a planet many light years away called Proteus. And it was from space as we approached, it looked a lot like our planet Earth. It had blue clouds and, or sorry, white clouds, blue oceans. But it didn't have any land masses. It was entirely covered in water. And so we dropped down through the clouds, submerged under the clear blue waters. And the plant life and sea life underneath reminded me of the plant and sea life under our oceans. Looked very much very similar. From what I'd seen from snorkeling in the previous adventures and documentaries and so on, looked very much the same. So Albert took me towards a large coral reef in the distance, and there we met up with a humpback whale and a dolphin. And they looked identical to the ones we have on Earth. And we communicated by telepathy, and they said to me, "You know, sea life on our planet looks very similar to the life on your planet because most of the sea life on your planet was originally seeded, transported from our planet to your planet a long time ago. So that's why it looks very similar. And the dolphins and whales on Earth are really the same as we are. They're our cousins." And they said that they maintained telepathic contact with the dolphins and whales on Earth, even though it was over vast many light years of distance. And they said that they didn't like what they heard about from their cousins on Earth, because the whales and dolphins on Earth were distressed and dismayed at the abuse that humans had been heaping on them over the centuries by hunting and killing and trapping and putting into amusement parks. And they felt that they had done nothing to deserve this treatment. They only wanted to live in harmony with their planet and with all other creatures on our planet, including humans. And they couldn't understand why humans wouldn't respond to them. And they try to communicate with us by telepathy, but humans just don't hear it. And we're not paying attention. We're not developed enough yet. And so they were quite dismayed. And they asked me to send a message back to my humans on Earth, my fellow humans, that they really should curtail this abuse of these very intelligent and sensitive creatures that ply our oceans on Earth. So that was a sort of an eye-opening message for me.
How's this affected you in how you have your outlook on fellow humans, animals, the environment, people, plants, you know, everything? How's this affected you?
Well, greatly, because now, after talking with Albert, I now see people differently. I realize that everyone that's walking down the street or I meet somewhere, there's a soul in there having a journey just like me, and that all souls are connected to the source and to each other. And so I look at people differently. It's not sort of like, he's over there and I'm here. I sort of realize that we are all connected, even though it seems like we're separate. So that helps me. I have more compassion for people. I'm less likely to become angry, if somebody steps on my toes, because I understand that they're just struggling to find their way through their own journey, and they're in a play, but they don't realize they're in a play, and they don't realize where they came from. Most of them don't, and they're not sure where they're going, and so it's very frustrating for them. I understand that, so I try to have a lot of compassion for them and for where they're going, and for animals. Albert told me in my first book, at one point I asked him, do animals have souls? And he said, you need only look into the eyes of your little dog to find your answer. And he's right. Look into the eyes of your dog or your cat or your hamster or your bunny or whatever it is, and you got to acknowledge there's a soul there. So they have souls too. And those souls are having a journey in an animal vehicle rather than a human vehicle. And they all go back to the spirit side just like us. And so that's why my little dog Oscar was waiting for me. He appeared to me as I last remembered him as an animal, but of course he was a soul just like me. And so as soon as I disappeared, he probably went back to his whatever form he liked to display. But our pets will often show up when we cross over to the spirit side, show up as a welcoming party for us, which gives us a lot of comfort, and it also gives people comfort to know that the pet, the dog or cat that they love so dearly, who's passed away, they will see them again. So given that, I look at animals much more differently. And one of my experiences in my that I describe in my second book, Albert took me to the Akashic Records, which, as you know, contain the records of every life that's ever been lived in the universe. He let me see a segment from one of my past, my current life, not one of my former lives, but segments from my current life. And he said, this is like a preview to my life review. And a life review is something that we all enjoy after we cross over. We get back to the spirit side and we have a life review where we can go over every aspect of the life we just finished. And we can look at it as though we're watching a 3D movie. We can actually jump back into our bodies to relive parts of it. And the very interesting aspect of a life review is that we get to hear the thoughts and feel the emotions of the people we interacted with during our lives. So if you said something nasty to somebody, your neighbor on the street one day, when you're having your life review, you'll get to feel that person's anguish and hurt at your words, which you may not have realized when you said them. So it's really an amazing learning lesson because you can really appreciate how your words and your actions affected others. But anyway, one of the aspects that he showed me of my current life was when I was practicing law. And I came home from work one day. I must have had a bad day, I don't know. And I walked through the door, and my little dog Oscar, the one that actually greeted me when I was first went to the spirit side, he had been laying in his bed by the window. When he heard the garage door open, he came running over towards the door, hoping to, happy to see me. He'd been waiting for me all day. I walked through the door, and I walked right past him without acknowledging him. All he had wanted was a greeting and a pat on his head to tell him that I still loved him. But when I walked past him with my head in the clouds, I could feel his emotions and hear his thoughts. And he was absolutely crushed by my indifference. And he didn't understand why I had ignored him. He wondered what he had done to offend me. Of course, he hadn't done anything. And he was very devastated by my just walking by him and ignoring him. And he slunk off to his little bed and put his, as Schnauzers do, they put their head on their cross paws. And he put his head down, and I knew that if dogs could cry, there would have been tears rolling down his cheeks. But it was just amazing for me to actually, very, very, it came through loud and clear, his feelings and his emotions. And so after that, I look at all animals, not just my current pet dog, but all animals, I look at them much differently. And I know that they have feelings and they have emotions, and they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. And so it's a totally new outlook for me. That's why I get so distressed when you hear about people sport hunting animals, trophy hunting. And I think that that's just terribly unnecessary, cruel, and that we should let these animals live their lives as they had planned. There's just no There's no justification whatsoever for mistreating an animal, any animal. So, big change. I mean, not that I was cruel to animals before, but I was a lot of times just indifferent. And now I understand that we really have to. I try to go out of my way to be kind to them.
With the second book, how's that continued on from the first? Obviously, the experiences continue, the information continues, the reconnecting with yourself continues. How's it different from the first book, and where's it, what direction has the information gone in that book?
Well, the second book was mainly the first book was basically to tell us answer all the big questions and tell us all the how the cycle of life and reincarnation and all that works. Second book was designed to try to get the message to humanity that as the Council of Wise Ones says, we need to really change our course of action before we destroy ourselves. We have to raise our vibrations. We have to quit the killing and the maiming and the violence. We have to get rid of our fear and our anger and our hate and our greed. And if we could do that, then we will expand our consciousness and eventually rise up to the new earth. So it was really sort of a call to action for humans. And so every place that we went was sort of a part of this message to make us realize, what we're doing here on this journey and what we really need to focus on to make it a better place. And there was a bit of urgency in their message. Albert said he was very confident that we could get over this hump, that we could get past this and take the next step up the spiritual ladder. But there's still some danger there. And what he told me is that we're getting a lot of help from other people. We're getting help from our ET friends. We have a lot of extraterrestrial friends that have been visiting and monitoring Earth, right from day one. And they've been around many different races, and they're trying to help us. And they have helped us in many subtle ways by giving us some technical know-how to help us with our technology here and there, giving us inspiration. Some of them actually are disguised as humans and live among us. But what they can't do is they can't do a major interference with our lives. They can't, like, for example, they have enough technology that they could destroy all of our weapons if they wanted to. They're not allowed to do that. They sort of have to let this experiment of humans on Earth run its course. And they can only jump in to interfere if there's a danger that we could just destroy the whole planet. But if we're going to just destroy ourselves, they have to stand by and watch, just as they watched Atlantis and Lemuria perish. And they really don't want to see that happen again. And the Council of Wise Ones is really helping a lot too, because they have been sending a lot of asking for volunteers, because they can't send anybody. You have to volunteer. Volunteers, very advanced souls, masters, to incarnate on Earth over the last while, to live among us and spread the message of love and hope from the spirit side. So they're just there to lead by example and to talk to other people and to try to get us to go on the right course, towards the new earth. And so that's been happening. They're also sending a lot of messages, and the pace has increased a lot over the last while. They send messages through channels all over the world. I'm just one channel. You're a channel, whether you know it or not, Peter. People who host radio and TV shows, speak at public gatherings, who write books and blogs. There's all kinds of them, and the message is all basically the core is all the same. There's different nuances depending on the how the particular channel receives it or translates it, but the core message is all the same. And when you say that some of the things that I just spoke about in my book really resonated with you, and that's because you've been getting messages that are pretty much the same. And I hear this all over the place from radio hosts, from people who read my books, and so many of them say, I got the same message from another source, and I'm really glad that what you said basically confirms and validates what I learned, what I heard, and it was very confirmational. And so many people said, a lot of the stuff that Albert told me was not necessarily new to them, but they really appreciated getting a confirmation from another source. And so I've heard that many times, and you just mentioned it earlier in the broadcast here. So that's basically what they're trying to do, and they're trying to get as many people as possible to hear the message and encourage their fellow humans, their neighbors, their coworkers, whatever, to head down the right path. There's so many humans who aren't even aware of what the problem is, and you can't fix the problem until you know what the problem is. So we have to do our best to get that message out. So that was really the main message of the second book. And then I have written a third book as well, which is further astral adventures with Albert, totally different from the first set. And that book is called Dance of Heavenly Bliss, and that will be released sometime in early 2016. So that's coming out. It's not released yet, but it'll be coming out soon. And so that's more nuggets of wisdom and insights from Spirit Guide Albert.
Have you come across other guides of yours as well, besides Albert?
Yeah, I did. In my third book, I describe an encounter with another of my guides. Her name is Alina, and she just sort of newly signed on to be one of my guides. And so I had a nice conversation with her. She had her last life on Earth. She had been a Cheyenne Indian in North America who had ended up perishing in some conflict with the U.S. Army. And so she had just signed on. I had a nice conversation with her. Albert tells me I have one more guide, but he won't tell me who it is yet. And so so now I know I have two of them, and hopefully one day I'll meet the third one. I also, in my third book, I also got to meet my guardian angel, which is really quite interesting because, as you know, we all have guardian angels. Their job is to watch over us and to keep us from accidentally getting into a situation where our physical lives might be terminated before our soul is ready to leave. Because the surprising thing that I learned from Albert is that no one dies by accident on Earth. Everyone dies when their soul is ready to leave the incarnation and not before. And so when I found this out, I'd said to him, "Well, but it seems like people die in accidents every day. I mean, planes crash and people die on the highways in accidents. We have so many people who have free will. The interaction of free will sooner or later could cause something untoward to happen to us, couldn't it?" And he says, "Yeah, often it's leading towards that, but our guardian angels step in, and if we're about to have a car accident that would terminate our lives, they would actually, if necessary, physically intervene to make sure that doesn't happen if our soul's not ready to go. And if our soul is ready to go, then they let it happen because it was in accordance with your soul's desires." So anyway, so I had a conversation with my guardian angel. She was really quite a nice person. She had a great sense of humor. Took a few shots at me. And humor is alive and well on the spirit side. It's not a bunch of very serious souls, solemn, that are just sort of going through life. They laugh. They have a great sense of humor. They often laugh at what happens to us down here. They laugh at us when we're not trying to be funny, just because of what we do. But anyway, so this guardian angel had a great sense of humor, and she said, "Yeah, she's pulled me out of a lot of scrapes. Most of the time, we're not aware that our guardian angel has saved us. It just sort of like things go on." And like her example is that if someone is sitting at a traffic light, at a red light, they may change the timing of the traffic light so that the red light stays red for 4 seconds longer, and that's to ensure that when you get to the next intersection, you don't get hit by somebody running the red light going the other way. And that's so some of it's so subtle you wouldn't even know they were doing it, but they're there 24/7, and they're there to make sure that you don't physically die until your soul is ready to go. And your soul, when you do a life plan, your soul will often pick out 5 or 6 exit points pre-planned. And as you go through life, your soul can say, "Okay, do I want to take this first one? No, I'll pass on that." And then you come to the second one, and your soul can then decide, "Do I want to take this exit, or do I want to keep on going?" And you can actually change those as you go through life, because every night when you sleep, your soul leaves your body temporarily, goes back to the spirit side to huddle with your guides and to sort of have a recap of what's happened so far in my life and where do I want to go, what else do I want to experience. And at that stage, you can actually make changes to your life plan and change your exit points. So it's sort of an ongoing developing thing. You don't remember any of these things, but it happens every night.
There's always
So,
that connection going on.
yes, exactly. Yeah. And your spirit guides are your coaches, as you know. They're there to coach you through your life. They're trying to help you stay on the course that you had planned, even though you don't, you stray off course often. And their messages are very subtle. Typically, they don't talk to you directly like Albert talked to me. That was a very much of an unusual one-off thing. Their messages are usually like flashes of intuition, gut feelings, whispers in your mind, coincidental events. And we have to be vigilant to notice them, to pay attention to them. because our minds are always so cluttered with many other thoughts every day about what happened in the past, what's going to happen next week, that we often don't hear these. So the way to sort of have a happier life is to try to get rid of your clutter in your mind through meditation mainly. And if you can do that, then you'll be able to be better listener to hear the messages from spirit, which is what we really should do. But you know, it's just so easy when you're going through life and you're working 9 to 5 and trying to put a roof over your head and food on the table. You often miss these messages, but they're there, especially when you come to a fork in the road. You have to make a decision. Should I take this job or should I take this job? If you listen carefully, you will get the answer. The answer being is the one that you wanted to take when you were planning your life before you were born.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's free will, but there's the over-self going, nah, this is what you've decided. You've got the options and free will still, but you've already got this decided.
Yeah. But the comforting thought is that no matter what you do, no matter how many mistakes you make or how far off course you go, it doesn't matter because you always end up back on the spirit side. And if you miss something in this life, you can just plan another life to try it again. You can have as many lives here as you want. Or if you get tired of incarnating on Earth, you can incarnate on a different planet into a different life form. You have just like millions, billions of choices. Or you can just stay in the spirit side and you know, sit on a cloud and listen to harp music if you choose.
Mm-hmm. There's many ways that they're communicating 24/7. Like, everyone's an experiencer. It's just if they don't take notice of the details that you just spoke of, whether it's whispers, flashes of intuition, synchronicity type events, this is how it's constantly going on. And it's like you get your ass kicked if you just don't take notice. It's like they're going to constantly be doing something anyway. But if it's going too far, you know, you're diverted too far off your track, they're gonna slowly bump you back to where you got to go. And it's really yourself, like you're saying, that's playing this up. They're just the guides and the ground crew in the background sort of, you know,
exactly,
making sure you don't go too far off like the angels you were talking about.
No, exactly. They're always there. And even if you do stray off course, you always have chances later on to get back onto the path because there's many, many different opportunities. And so if you miss the first message or even the second message, probably by the time the third one comes around, you'll get it and you'll get back on track. At least that's the hope. So, you know, it's a wonderful system. It's meant to be difficult. Like the Earth School is one of the most difficult ones in the universe, according to Albert, and it's intended to be difficult. And he's often told me that humans should pat themselves on the back because they have to be very brave and courageous to jump into a human life on this planet because it's a very tough school. And so we should all give ourselves a pat on the back. It doesn't help us that much in terms of, well, we're still living here, but it's good to know that, is that, you know, we've probably had many other incarnations on easier planets, easier life forms. You know, we may have all have had some incarnations on animals on Earth, and because their lives are much more simpler than a human life, you would typically, if you're coming to Earth, start off maybe with an animal or two and then move up to a human, because to jump right into a human with no prior experience on this planet, it would be very tough, but some people can do it.
That's basically how it's been explained to myself, where they have experiences as even insects and bugs and then animals to slowly be able to handle the body computer. And
yes,
if not, they've come directly from source, but they've been downloaded like software programs, so they've almost got the tips and tools available in the soul essence to help them handle the human body computer, because it's something where you have to have experience to be able to handle something advanced like this, because we can do things that even some of the other beings can't in terms of how we can, you know, our telepathy skills and astral travel and all that sort of things. They can do it, but just the variety of and range of things we can do isn't like many other beings. So there is this aspect to it, isn't there, where, you know, there is training going on some level to be able to handle this experience and do this experience.
Yeah, that's right. That you explained it very, very well. It's you start off with some simpler life forms to get to know the environment, the planet, how to control the physical bodies on this dense plane, and then you gradually move up because it would be really difficult to jump right into a human. Although some advanced souls actually do it, most of us we start off at the boot camp and gradually, you know, move our way up. But let me tell you before. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just about to ask you just about some of the earth changes and things like that. Like, has there been any information or anything shown to you in terms of not doom and gloom, though I do think there's going to be some sort of shake-ups to sort of get us where we've got to go, but has there been anything on any scale shown to you or said that there's chances of things, certain things happening to get where we're going, Earth changes wise?
No, he didn't get into that at all. What he did do, though, was he showed me sort of the end goal for us, the new Earth. So one of my astral trips, he took me to our planet, which exists at the same time as our current planet, but in a much higher dimension, and it's called the new Earth. And he took me there, and it's a beautiful place. It looks just like our planet. And I met up there the descendants of a civilization that had originally lived on our old Earth centuries ago in Central America. And they had managed to orchestrate a mass ascension up to the new Earth by increasing their vibrations sort of all at once in a big jump to escape from a barbarian army that was encroaching on their territory. And so I met with these descendants. This happened like eons ago. And they had a, you know, a great existence because the new Earth, there's no crime, there's no negative emotions. Everyone lives in peace and harmony with each other, with their planet, with the other creatures. They don't pollute their planet. They don't kill other creatures. They eat liquid food made from plants. And they've learned how to slow down the aging process and to shield themselves from disease and repair injured tissue. And so they all live to be, you know, several hundred years old. And it's a very idyllic existence. And they're free to, they don't have to work. Everything's provided for them. So they're free to pursue wisdom and knowledge and enjoy the peaceful splendor of their planet. It was an amazing place. And Albert said, this is where all humans can eventually get to. And a lot of humans have made the transition over the years. Sometimes they do it individually, sometimes in small groups. In this case, it was sort of a large group. That's unusual. But there was a lot of humans who had made the transition. And the trick is, as I mentioned before, we have to raise our vibrations so we match our vibratory rate with the rate of the new Earth. And until we do that, we can't get there. And to get there, it seems very simple, but it's hard to achieve. It is discard your negative emotions and fully embrace love and compassion. And if you can do that, your vibrations will just, like magic, they'll just increase. And, you know, one day you'll suddenly find yourself in a new Earth. So that's where we should all strive to get to. And that's really the light at the end of the tunnel. That's the hope for humankind. And so he's got a lot of confidence that that we can get over the hump and not destroy ourselves before we get there. But we have a lot of work to do. I mean, there's still too many negative emotions. If you listen to the nightly news, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, violence, terrorists, killings, bombings, wars, other conflicts. We really have to stop that. And it's got to be a concerted effort. And, you know, it's really got to start at the grassroots, because if the grassroots people prevail upon their political leaders, their rulers, to stop it, and if there's enough people saying we need to change this, eventually it will change. You know, things do happen. It's slow, but we can get there.
Have they, or through your experiences, have you been shown how things have gotten this way? I know that we've got free will, that we go out and we've got to experience everything as a collective. So that means the good or the bad, it's like no holds bar. My experience has to be different from yours, but we have to experience everything. But has there been anything shown to you why things have got so severely this way? On in this plane, on this planet Earth at this time, compared to other planets, because you spoke of other planets that have had similar things going on. Is it really just a over, like, is it, you know, got, do you think, in your opinion, it's got something to do with just the evolution of each collective civilization, you know, evolving?
That's basically how it happened. When they first seeded humans on Earth, they didn't know how it would turn out. They didn't know how we would develop, how we would, you know, how we would evolve. But because they can't sort of interfere, they had to let it play out the way it was. And they were quite, you know, the ETs and the Council of Wise Ones were quite dismayed at sort of how some of the things turned out. And the biggest thing was that they. That the humans, the cause for our where we are now is our negative emotions, and fear is sort of the central one, and springing off from that is anger, hate, and greed, and so on, and that's been the biggest problem for us, and that, you know, they hadn't planned this, but somehow the negative emotions kind of overrun the positive ones like love and compassion to a large degree, and that's why we had a, you know, violence through our history. And they don't really have an explanation for that. That's just how it turned out. They have to just let it run, and they hope that we can turn the corner and go back and discard our negative emotions and embrace love and compassion. That's what they had hoped for. And there's a lot of civilizations, according to Albert, in other planets where they don't have negative emotions. And some of those people, they actually visit our planet, observe it. They can't understand why humans, are killing and maiming each other and causing all this violence. They sort of shake their heads and saying, "Why are these people doing this? Don't they realize that they're all souls having an incarnation on Earth? They're all part of the source. I mean, why can't they just love each other and discard all this violence?" They don't understand it. So we're kind of unique in that way. We not, as Albert said, we not only abuse our planet by polluting her and the other creatures on our planet, but we also abuse one another. So he says we're viewed in a lot of places as a triple threat, but in a very negative sense. And so we're just an experiment that started a long time ago. Here we are, and we've risen up, as I said, and crashed and burned in many occasions. So far, we haven't destroyed our planet, here we are again, and we could easily destroy all the life on our planet if we unleash our weapons. And they really hope that this time it won't happen, but they're determined to let it play out.
It's got to, and this is where the free will part comes into it, which goes into what some of the, I guess, tips and tools and things, and advice do you have for people to play their part and to sort of deal with their own emotions and to evolve, like to be proactive in this and be active and actually do something rather than, so many people are out there preaching their gospel, or whatever. What's some of the things people can do to take on to help themselves? Some of the tips that you've got where people can, obviously meditation's one of them. Is there any other things you could go into or recommend for people to help themselves?
Unfortunately, there's no magic solution, Peter. I've asked Albert this. He says we each have to struggle. First of all, we have to control our own negative emotions. We have to sort of, once we understand that, as I said, everyone else around you is really part of you, part of the source. They're just in a different physical vehicle right now. So that's the first step, is to realize that if I'm going to cause harm to the person walking down the street, I'm really effectively doing the same thing to myself, because we're all part of the source. So if you realize that we're not separate, we're really together, then that's the first big step. And you have to learn to love, first of all, you have to learn to love yourself and forgive yourself for your mistakes, because you can't truly love others or forgive others if you haven't loved and forgiven yourself. So first step is fully love and forgive yourself for your mistakes, because you're just here on a learning experience. You're bound to make mistakes. It's not a big deal. And then from there, then you can extend your love out to other people. And how you can help other people is just by, well, you can lead by example. You can talk to them, without sort of preaching and lecturing them, but explain to them your belief system and how you think things work. You can recommend them to listen to radio shows like yours, where that message is getting out, to read books like mine and many others. It's just a matter of very gently persuading other people to see the light. And to understand that in order to take the next step up the spiritual ladder, you have to discard your negative emotions. And then the other thing is to be kind and compassionate to other people, because if you do a random act of kindness, there's often a very positive ripple effect, where the person on the receiving end of your act of compassion will in turn do an act of kindness to somebody else, and it'll spread out like a ripple in a pond. And so, try to be kind and compassionate as many times as you can. Even if it seems to you to be a minor act of kindness, it can have a positive, really positive effect on the person on the other receiving end. And then that's, as I say, that sort of ripples out. So those are the things that we can all do. And if we can all think about that every day, understand that if somebody steps on your toes, somebody cuts you off in traffic, somebody bumps into you in the subway, understand that they're just a soul, trying to make their way through life on Earth, and they're trying to learn how to behave, and they're struggling with it. And so you're struggling with your life, they're struggling with theirs. If you understand that, then you're less likely to yell and scream at somebody who causes you harm, or to flip the bird to someone in traffic who cuts you off. And if you do that, very soon other people will see what you're doing, and they hopefully will try to copy you. So it's a hard process. It's a long process, but every little bit helps. And if you can make one person every day understand where they need to go, then that's a big help, especially if you have a lot of people all trying to do the same thing.
With the experiences that you've had, have you ever seen realms of light, structures of light, or even geometric planes or realms?
Haven't seen any of those. No, I've only been into one other dimension, which was in the New Earth. Albert says that there's just basically infinite number of different dimensions, all different vibrations. I haven't been into any of the other realms that you described. Hopefully someday Albert will take me. But Albert's on a mission. He takes me to places that he thinks I need to see to write about, and he's got a very set agenda that he doesn't always tell me what's on it. And so I'm not taking these trips just for the fun of it. He's got a purpose, a mission for me. And so someday he may take me to some of these places, especially if he wants me to write about it. But I'm sort of in his hands. I follow his marching orders. So where what I see is what he thinks I should see and write about at that particular time.
We've got a few minutes to go, so I'll just ask you now, with the experiences now, with what's going on for yourself, are things more telepathic in terms of the information, like you were saying earlier? It's not like he's popping in like he used to, but it's more telepathic, and then you still go on these astral journeys, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, I still communicate with him by telepathy, and he does take me on astral trips. As I say, I just finished the second set, which is in my third book. He tells me he's coming back soon to take me in another set. Doesn't tell me when, but he says there's still more. I have to write a fourth book and a fifth book, so I'm just waiting for him to contact me. In terms of telepathy with other people, I haven't been able to communicate with other people that way, other than people on the spirit side. And the people in the water planet and some of the other planets that he's taken me to, I'm able to communicate with them by telepathy, but I haven't been able to do so with other people on Earth. I'm not sure it's because I'm not adequate or because they're not equipped to communicate that way. Haven't been able to talk to animals, other creatures on our planet by telepathy yet, but I was able to communicate with that dolphin and whale on Proteus, and that was a special circumstance. So I would love to be able to expand my psychic abilities, but so far Albert hasn't got me there yet, and so I just have to be patient.
Yeah, no, well, it is best to be patient, and it's a big job writing books as well. So this is where you're relaying the experiences, but then the editing and everything else that goes with it. There's a lot of work to it, and the information's got to be as precise as you experienced it as well. So there's lots of work in there. Have you found with the experiences, not only is it you getting information out, but have you learnt more about yourself than anything else in terms of your true nature and who you are?
Oh yes, when I met Albert, it was an amazing transformation for me from where I was before. It took me off in a totally different path. As I say, I now have a lot more compassion and understanding for other people, for other animals, and for our planet, and in terms of the abuse we're giving it with the pollution. So I'm a very, very much of a different person, and I really quite enjoy my new path. I enjoy writing. I find that every book that I read or write is easier than the last one. So I really quite enjoy that. I enjoy being on radio shows and speaking engagements and talking about my books, which I find, I find that to be very rewarding. And I get a lot of really good comments from people who've read my books or listened to the interviews. And so I think I'm doing my little part. I'm just a small cog in a very large wheel, but I'm happy to do it. And so I just very much enjoy my life. To me, it's like a very welcome change from practicing law, which I did for 34 years, and I'm very happy to be on this new path. And I've lost some of my friends and colleagues along the way. I just know some of them think that poor old Garnet has become senile very early, and I knew that was going to happen. But I've met a lot of very nice new friends, a lot of people, spiritually enlightened people, who really enjoy reading my books and talking to me. And so, you lose some, you win some. Overall, I've won a lot more friends than I've lost. So I think it's been very rewarding for me.
So, for more on yourself and the books and everything else, you've got a website, haven't you, which the description will be below this, or where people are downloading the audio version. What else is on the website that people can go and check out?
Well, there's a synopsis for each of my books on the website. You can also download a free excerpt from each book. I've also got a book video for each of them posted on my website. Click on that, and it's basically a book video where I describe what's in my book. There's also I've also uploaded onto my YouTube page, which you can access from my website. I list all my social media sites there, like YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. And if you click on my YouTube site, you can actually get to a place where I read an excerpt from each book. Gives you more information. There's also buy links on my website where you can just click on them to all the popular online stores where you can buy my books, including for my good friends in Australia, Angus and Robertson. Just click on that and you'll get access to both my books. They're in paperback and ebook version, both of them. And the third book will be there as well as soon as it's released. So, and my email address is on my website. I'd welcome questions or comments from any of your listeners. Just send me an email, and so far I've been able to respond to all of them, and I welcome the contact.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, we'll wrap it up there. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. It'd be great to get you back on sometime. And again, just thanks for taking the time and sharing your experiences with everyone and what you've, you know, what you've learned and what you are continuing to learn.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, Peter. I've enjoyed every minute of it, and I'd love to be back on your show maybe when the third book is out.
Yeah, definitely. Keep us informed, and I'll keep posted.
Great.
Thank you very much. Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.